Taylor Rooks is host of Take It There with Taylor Rooks for Bleacher Report and Turner Sports, and she joins us in Writer's Block. Taylor, thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us today. Again, it was a piece that it put me in the bubble as much as I could possibly get in there. And before we get to the details, I just wanted to ask you, when you were writing that piece and you sat back and looked at it, was there something you learned about NBA players or the NBA, the social culture around the NBA that surprised you from being in that bubble?
Oh, yeah. Well, first, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all the complimentary things that you said about the article. I'm so happy that you enjoyed it and felt that way. As far as something I learned while reporting for the article, I would say, you know, I think that for people looking into the bubble and, you know, people who kind of just had thoughts in their head and an idea in their head about what the bubble was like, a lot of people thought it was just a bunch of NBA players playing basketball, then going to their rooms and just playing basketball again. And the basketball to me wasn't really like the story. Like, I thought the cool parts about the NBA obviously was the social justice part, but it was also guys that were just like sitting at the bar together, you know, or it didn't make it in the story, but it was like Jason Tatum telling me that he had just like a 3-hour conversation with Montrez just about life. And they became cool after having that conversation. You know, it was learning that Masai Ujiri and Doc Rivers are really close friends and they leaned on each other when they were having really hard nights in the bubble. Like, it was things like that, that I learned that the bubble for a lot of people strengthened relationships. It also formed a lot of really new ones. And that to me was the coolest part about the whole experience.
First tell, phenomenal piece. I mean, really just well done. And as Jeff said, it just kind of illuminates, you know, it illuminates the fun of being in the bubble, and it illuminates sort of being around the guys and just sort of, you know, drinking expensive wine and, you know, trying to sort of doing what, you know, multimillionaires.
CJ McCollum's a sommelier. Who knew that?
Yeah, in their 20s and 30s. Yeah, CJ McCollum would remember that if you need to. Yeah, but I was going to say, so like it illuminates that, but at the same time, you also, you capture the most important moments of the bubble. And obviously that was after Jacob Blake was murdered and how this impacted all of these players and people like Masai Ujiri, and they basically didn't want to play anymore. They were like, this is, you know, we're doing something irrelevant here. We're not helping our community. So, so full props to you on that. I want to ask you that, were you have so much detail on this piece that my sense is that you were keeping notes throughout. And if so, that was the case, or did you, after the bubble ended, go back to some of the players and sort of ask them for specifics of what was going on at the time?
Yeah, so I did both. I tried to really challenge myself and push myself to, at the end of every night, write down what happened that day. Obviously, some nights I would be back in the hotel and so tired that I would forget to do it. But for the majority of the nights, I would just try to jot down things, even if they were like really tiny things, seemed insignificant. Like, there would be days where I would write the meal that I had and that it was better than the other days. Like, I would just try to, you know, have as many details as possible, just because, you know, you never know one day if those things are going to come in handy. But then when I was asked to write this piece for GQ, it became going back to some of those notes, looking at moments, reaching out to guys that I remembered were there for those moments, and then diving deeper into the moments. Because, you know, I could only write about the things that I saw, but they were going back in spaces that we weren't in, and they could expand on things. So it was definitely a mix of both. And a lot of it for me too was, you know, writing really is a lot different than, you know, writing for a show or writing questions for an interview that's going to be broadcast. Like, you are really having to, you know, poke and get people to just go a little deeper. So when somebody would say, okay, they had some of the best times in the bubble, I would have to say, well, like, point me to that time, right? And then, okay, in detail, tell me who was there and tell me what it looked like. Like, all of that stuff was really important. Like, when George Hill said that he told his coaches over breakfast what, like, that he didn't want to play in that game, I was like, well, what did you eat for breakfast? You know, and that's when he tells me the whole meal that he ate, and that was the same meal that he ate every single day. So I just think when you're writing, like, the first question is literally the base question. And then I would ask like six other questions just off of this one question. And I just think that that made it more detailed and hopefully, you know, painted a really vivid picture for the reader.
In conversation with Taylor Rooks on Writer's Block, I talked a little bit about the C.J. McCollum and the, essentially opening the wine shop and conversations with players on the court about, man, that was great. You know, I want another bottle of that tonight. But reading the piece further, in addition to the meeting surrounding the shooting or the death of Jacob Blake, the thing that kind of resonated with me, because I, like a lot of people, I thought, millionaire players in the bubble, there's going to be, guys, it's going to be a lot of fun in a lot of ways. Yeah, stuff's going to get old, but at the end of the day, hey, somebody will have somebody to talk to, et cetera, et cetera. Your description of John Lucas at a meeting where essentially the sort of the mental aspect of being in the bubble was being discussed by players. Your description of John Lucas getting up, he's a Rockets assistant coach and someone who has had a very public struggle with alcoholism, getting up. And this comment, I know most people in here are just drinking every night because there's nothing else to do. And at some point, a lot of people are going to turn into alcoholics. You talk about how that moment resonated with the players. Can you maybe tell us a little more about that? Because it just gets, again, it gets to me the idea that I think we look at these guys as having everything going for them. And, everybody has issues dealing with COVID-19, but these guys are in the very best hotels, they're having everything given to them, et cetera, et cetera. They're playing basketball, they're making good money, all that good stuff. But there really is a mental toll here, isn't there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the thing with John Lucas, first off, to stand up in this room with all of these guys and be, continue to be so open and candid about a time in your life that was really difficult, a major struggle that has happened in your life, and almost insinuate that, this is how these things begin. I think was just, that is honestly my favorite part of the piece. Not just because I had never heard it anywhere until the guys told me, but because it was a lot of the guys' most meaningful moment, from that meeting. But I just through the reporting, like even John Morant saying, like, I went through a lot of mental struggles in the bubble. John Morant is 21 years old, and to know that it was so difficult for him to be in there at times, to be away from his daughter. And Chris Paul was saying, Chris Paul is the president of the NBPA. He is the guy that you go to if you're having a bad day. He's the guy you go to if you need something fixed. And he's like, who does that guy go to when they need something? So a lot of things I know were weighing on Chris Paul. When I was talking to Chris for the interview, he was telling me how a rule he tried to set for himself is he never wants to have a text in his phone. So imagine how many text messages Chris Paul was getting the day that the NBA stopped, and he's trying to make sure he gets to all of them. Like, it can also be really draining to be the person that's there for everybody, even though you're great at it and you love doing it. You know what I mean? Like, that has to take a lot, like this, that responsibility and that weight that comes with that. So I think guys really, really did have some mental hurdles that they had to overcome in the bubble that was extremely real. And a lot of people were really candid about it. But I also wanted to make sure people understood that it was different things to different people. For some, there was a lot of light moments. And some people really enjoyed the bubble. Like, I know Kimball Walker is somebody who enjoyed the bubble. And so I just wanted to make sure that that resonated as well in the piece.
Taylor, for our audience's purposes, because they're going to find this anecdote phenomenally amusing, can you talk about the proximity that Masai Ujiri had to Kawhi Leonard during the bubble?
Yes, that's definitely my favorite funny moment of the piece. I was always going back and forth. I'm like, oh, should I move this up? Like, it's so good. The top seeded teams all stayed at the Grandestino Hotel. And so the Raptors were on, I think, the 9th floor. And every morning, Masai would wake up, he'd read a book, coffee, but then he would get on his Peloton. Every morning at like 5 a.m. It was his routine, the thing that he did every single day. And he was doing it for weeks. And then one morning he got a text that said, like, morning, boss, you good up there? And it was Kawhi Leonard. And turns out Kawhi's room was directly below Masai's room. So for weeks in the bubble, Masai was waking up Kawhi because he was working out, you know, doing his morning routine. And so Kawhi, like, you know, told him he was below him, and Masai, you know, jokingly was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm sorry, I won't do that again until we meet in the finals. And then Kawhi said, you know what, I could get you kicked out the bubble. So it was just it's a really fun moment, and I think a peek into Kawhi that we don't always see. So I really enjoyed that.
Taylor, how did you find life in the bubble personally?
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I think just because I realized how big the moment was, and I knew it was going to be so unforgettable. And I can say with pretty good confidence that through the rest of my career, this will be the thing that I remember the most, and maybe that I'm the most proud of, and the thing that will really, really stick out to me, just because, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. We are continuing this really important racial reckoning in this country where people are having to face a lot of ugly truths about America. And this is all going on while these basketball players are trying to win a championship. They're also away from their families. We are in Disney World. Like, it was just so many things happening. And it was one of the few times where I feel like, you know, I think sometimes when you're going through things in life, you don't necessarily realize the magnitude of them. But this is a time that I was like, no, this is history. And right now, we're actually a part of history. And we get to tell a story of what's going on. And years to come, like, we are the people that, like, are chronicling that. I think there's something really, really cool and important about that. I saw somebody say, I don't remember who it was. I wish I did, because I think it was so true. Someone was like, this is one of the last great sports writing experiences. You know, that you are just fully immersed in this place. And there is such a small amount of people who can say what went on there. And so I think there was a great responsibility to tell that story in the right way. So I really, really enjoyed the bubble. And there's not going to be another one, but if there was, I would definitely sign up.